You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com.
Welcome to this episode of the KoopaCast. Matt's going to be mad that I have no clue what number we're on. To me, every episode is the first episode, because every episode is going to be the greatest episode. So this is episode one of greatness. Yeah. I'm joined by Trevor and Justin, and the question I want to lead with is, first of all, you guys are movie fans, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
You see any Academy Award fans? Anyone watch Academy Awards?
We did watch the tail end of it.
What was your favorite of what you saw? What was your favorite nominated movie?
Oh goodness. I don't think I saw any of the nominated movies.
You didn't see any of the
I'm glad you said that, because now I don't feel as guilty that I haven't either.
Yeah.
Come on.
What was even on the list? Like, there 12 Years a Slave.
And 12 Years a Slave. Dallas Buyers Guide.
Didn't see that.
Gravity.
Is that the one with Sandra Bullock?
Yeah.
I was curious in that, but I haven't
Gravity
seen it.
Gravity was good. Gravity.
Yeah. Was. Yeah, we want to watch it at some point, but we haven't seen it. So yeah, I don't think I've seen any of them on the list.
There's nine of them. Wolf on Wall Street?
Huh?
The Wolf of Wall Street?
No, I haven't seen that. I actually don't see many of the movies that are actually nominated, because mostly they're movies that, well, sometimes there's Oscar bait movies that I probably wouldn't watch, you know, just because they're more independent or limited showing or something like that, but.
Yeah, your question's kind of wasted on us, I guess, James.
Yeah. I just like fun movies with robots and explosions. I mean, like Transformers 4 isn't going to be up for an Oscar, but I'm probably going to watch it because it's got cars and
Transformers. You see, wait, okay, then let's go this way. Did you see the new trailer that came out like 2 days ago?
It
looks good. Like the trailer they showed during the Super Bowl, I was like, it's not too exciting.
But, they better have more Dinobots. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Looks good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess the big thing that happened since the last KoopaCast is the release of Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze.
Yes.
So Justin just finished it Sunday. Mm-hmm. So how is it?
It's amazing. I finished it. I'll preface that. I finished it by getting all the Kong letters on every world and level. I got most of the puzzle pieces, but didn't get all of them. But got through every single level. I won't mention any spoilers, but the game, I was just consistently impressed with the quality of the levels and just the depth of them. Like, there's some levels where there's, like, I don't know, like five levels of animated things going on. Like, you're going through this one area, and I get distracted by what's going on in the background. and it was just really nice, because in the Mario Brothers 2D games, they're still they look really good and they play really well, but just the environment seemed more immersive, I guess, in Donkey Kong, especially when, you know, they do the camera shifting. They do a lot of different things with, you know, shooting back into the background and the foreground, and I don't know, there's just a lot of vibrant detail in the environment. So I thought it was great.
Better than Donkey Kong Country Returns?
Yes, I would definitely say it's better.
How about challenge? Because Tristan was kind of said he thought it might be a little easier because of the potential to accumulate a lot of free guys.
Yeah, now I did the same thing. So when I was going through, I think Tristan said in the review by world two, he had 99 lives, right? Or maybe halfway through world two.
Something like that.
So it was about the same for me, but I feel like the lives are kind of there, like at least the easiness that it is to get the lives for when you have like someone else playing. Because I feel like you're going to need more of those lives having two people playing through the levels. When I was playing by myself and just kind of cruising through, getting the Kong letters, it was a lot easier and I was getting lives quicker than probably normal. So I think it was just there, you know, if you were playing multiplayer or if, you know, your kid's playing or something like that, you have a lot of extra lives to go through. So by the later levels, I think by like World 4, I was hovering around like 40 lives, and I think one of the worlds, near the end, I was getting down to where I was almost getting game over, and I actually had to buy some banana,
Oh, wow.
not bananas, balloons. So I thought it was really challenging. Like some of the last levels are ridiculous, and if anyone's played the last few levels in the game, you'll know what I'm talking about, but. It's just ridiculous. I played some of those levels like probably 100 times each or something. So.
Wow.
But doesn't that seem the norm for a lot of Nintendo games? Like even Mario now, the last few Mario games. Like I haven't finished 3D World yet, but like I'm on World 8 and I still have like 40, 50 lives. And the same thing with last Mario. I had 40, 50 lives, 60 lives, but it wasn't until that last little bit where I used a lot of those lives. That just seems like the norm for a Nintendo nowadays. Give you a whole bunch of lives, make it somewhat easy at the beginning, and then hit you across the head at the end.
Yeah, kind of. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we big gamers, we tend to talk about challenge and reference the old school days of really challenging games, but I don't think challenge in and of itself is what makes or breaks a game. Because I mean, there's a ton of difficult games that I love, but by the same token, there's a lot of games that are pretty easy and I enjoy just as much. I think it's really how it's, I guess, how it's implemented without sounding too cryptic. I like, with the Mario games, it's really, I mean, at this point with like the new series, for me, I think it's really more with like the multiplayer hijinks and kind of solo experience, me playing with my wife or friends or whatever.
And like Mario 3D World was great for multiplayer, I thought. I thought they implemented four-player multiplayer really well in a 3D environment. That's probably the best example I can think of having four people in the same environment and interacting together. I mean, sure, someone's gonna bubble up and you know get lost when people are moving on through a tube, pipe every now and then, but
Yeah, but
for the
that's to
most
be
part.
expected. I mean, there's only in that type of environment, there's only so much you can do, and like you said, they might have fallen short, but who can do it better? Who has? Nobody yet.
Yeah, I can't think of a better game with that type of multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm curious if Donkey Kong, like this with Mario, what I like about him is the levels themselves, they're not as hard as we may remember them as kids, but what makes them difficult and challenging for more of the pro gamers is collecting all the coins or finding that stamp. Like completing the level, that's if you just want to complete a level, what's not hard? It's finding those hidden things and getting to those objects, which really makes a level a lot harder than it normally would be if you just ran through it to the finish line and jumped on the pole. Is Donkey Kong like that? Like its levels are fairly standard unless you're finding the Kong letters or finding everything.
Well, there's actually, I mean, it's still pretty hard even to find the Kong letters. There were a few levels towards the end. There was actually one level in particular. It took me forever to actually get the G on it, like just to even figure out how to get it. But some people, I think maybe it was on NeoGAF or something, but people were talking about, oh, Donkey Kong only has six worlds, right? And they're like, oh, but Mario 3D World, it's got, you know, you've got, once you get past World Bowser, I don't want to spoil anything, but you've got other stuff after that. But the levels in Mario versus the levels in Donkey Kong are a lot different. In Donkey Kong, instead of having just one halfway marker, you may have two or three checkpoints throughout the levels. Like the first level you play in Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, you're gonna be surprised at how long it is. Like you're gonna go through it, you're like, man, this is actually a really huge level. And it's, really good that they didn't implement a time system because you probably, wouldn't get to enjoy the level as well as you do as it is now. But I don't know, I feel like the scope of the levels is just a lot different. So six worlds of levels that have a lot more variety, a lot more variation to it. I think it equals out about to the experience Mario 3D World had. But and someone was mentioning the last level in Mario 3D World is probably one of the hardest levels that I've ever played in recent memory. I would consider it maybe one of the hardest Mario levels ever. There's some lost levels that are pretty bad, but with Mario 3D World, I do think that they had a lot of that challenge, and in Tropical Freeze, there's a lot of that there as well. Like you were mentioning, for the hardcore gamers that want to collect all the coins, collect all of the puzzle pieces, when you get to the end of Tropical Freeze, it kind of opens up more. And so those people who are breezing through the game, they're going to be satisfied when, as they move on. So.
So there's a lot of stuff for the completionist
Oh yeah.
to want to stretch it out. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to spoil what happens at the end, but there is something you unlock essentially at the end. So.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Which is better?
3D World or Tropical Freeze?
Oh, Tropical Freeze. Even though
Oh.
you're in the moment of Tropical Freeze.
The fact that you're hesitating is kind of telling in itself.
Yeah. Tropical Freeze is just awesome. Like I said, I loved the art style, the visuals, just the depth of everything. And the variety of the levels, I think, is really cool. So I don't know, but 3D World's really good too.
Well, if you had reviewed Tropical Freeze, like Tristan gave it an 8.5, what would you have scored it?
I probably would have scored it higher. I probably would have given it a 9 or more. Mostly because I just had a blast with it. Just the level design and everything. And you can't really compare, Mario 3D World, so you can't say, oh, we gave Mario 3D World what did we give Mario 3D World? 9.5?
9.8, I think.
Nine point
Yeah,
eight. Yeah,
nine point
we gave it a pretty high score. So you can't just say, oh, it was as good or a little less, so it's a 9.5. I mean, it's a wholly different game, but yeah, I probably would have given it a higher score. Sorry, Tristan. I feel bad for Tristan too. He played that in like a night, so he was like, "I'm just gonna play it all in one night." Like as soon as we got the review copy, he was just like, "I'm just gonna play it all night." I was like, "Well, you don't have to." He's like, "No, I'm gonna do it." I was like, "All right, all right." But that's kind of his thing. When he plays a game, he likes to play all the way through it, pretty quick. Like usually he'll play with his retro reviews. He'll play all the way through the game in a night. And wake up noon the next day and write the review. So,
But speaking of reviews, this is a good segue to our next topic. And I'm going to let Trevor explain it a little bit because it's one of his topics. He wrote an awesome article, a purely opinion piece. Basically, I guess you can sum it up more, but basically, I guess how I describe it, should indie games, eShop games be reviewed on the same plane as AAA titles or $60 titles? Trevor, can you tell us a little bit about how this idea came up and about the article?
It had been an idea of mine for a while, and part of that stems, I guess, because when I first started writing for Pure Nintendo, I was really doing tiny budget games, DSiWare, which was still going at the time, and some tiny eShop games, and but Jules from Renegade Kid had tweeted, I think the question was, should cost be a factor? And in game reviews. I don't remember exactly how it was worded, and it's a lot of people basically said no, fun is fun, and it shouldn't matter. And I'm of the mindset, and Jules was as well, which is how we ended up collaborating, that it's really not fair when you have a big budget studio with tens of millions of dollars. They can put out a retail $60 game, and then you have a $2 eShop game from a one-man team. There's got to be, I mean, let's be realistic, there's going to be compromises. And people say fun is fun, and that's true, but my concern is that their fun equates into things like the visuals, the amount of content, the length, the polish, and obviously a small indie game oftentimes is going to fall short in that regards, and it hurts the score, especially like we were talked about in the review, in the article a bit with Metacritic. I remember when a 7 was a good score. Now on Metacritic, a 7, isn't really considered a good score. It's average. So yeah, that was kind of the main goal of the article. And I guess my concern for anyone who might just look at the title of that or skim it, really try to get the sense of it, isn't so much, scoring, fun being fun, but it's really just trying to take things in context when we look at games, and understand where a price comes from. People don't just slap a price on, willy-nilly. There's a reason a game is a budget game, or there's a reason a game is a full price game. And that's it. You want to know more, you got to read
No
it.
more spoilers.
I mean, do you, I don't know your own, I talked to James a little bit about it, but I mean, do you think that's something that comes up? Maybe not with us, with pure Nintendo, but with reviewers in general, do you think they kind of, give maybe smaller budget games the raw end of the stick a bit when they, are looking for things that realistically shouldn't be expected?
Yeah, I could see that kind of in general, and maybe I've got a bias, but I think we look at indie games a little bit better at Pure Nintendo. Seems like, we have a lot of indie games that we review, and we're always really excited about them, and I think we give them just the same light of day that we would, a AAA game. Yeah, I do think in general, reviewers are less enthusiastic, when it comes to scoring an indie game. They're like, oh, this game only has like four different types of levels. Yes, they keep getting increasingly random or something like that, so there is some replayability, but the content, the polish, when compared to this $60 game, yeah, it's not worth your time. And you mentioned the Metacritic scores. I think that's interesting because I think most scores are like 7 to 10 now. That's kind of like the average. If it's below 7, people are like, "What? Why?" And then it's almost like, "Well, why do we even have a 1 to 10 score range? why not just have A, B, C or something like that? C is, average or the bottom or whatever, and then you've got B and A or whatever, but
I know. I mean, I remember, like the days of EGM or Nintendo Power, and a 5 was always average. And then, certain like Game Informer or something, I think they kind of were one of the first to kind of, say, let's not even consider the bottom end of the spectrum. And, for better or worse, and obviously I think it's worse, but, especially too on Wii U, where the bulk of, the games that are coming from indie developers, since the third party support is, not where we hope it would be. I hate to see them, have their scores knocked, even if it's just a point. I mean, that can make all the difference for people who go straight to the score and don't even bother reading a review. I hate to see them be held sold short by standards that aren't really fair.
I think it's getting better. I think the definition of an indie title has been changing a little bit over the last couple of years, especially with kind of bigger budget indie games like, you know, this Child of Light. It's not really an indie game. It's a downloadable game, you know. And I mean, there's several other examples of just really popular downloadable titles that have been coming out recently. So I feel like people are differentiating, you know, like the indie games on consoles from, let's say, a mobile game that has limited scope to it, limited depth. So, and I think developers are finding more of a sweet spot of content and quality with downloadable titles. You know, I think they're pricing things pretty aggressively, and so I think it's starting to change because people are like, hey, yeah, I have 10 downloadable titles and I love them more than three retail titles that they were the price of, you know. And I think the Wii U is actually helping to change a lot of that. I mean, I know the Wii U is struggling with third party, you know, for AAA games, but I mean, it's just flourishing with indie developers right now. I mean, they're all trying to get their games out. Like, I think most of the release list coming up is dominated by indie games.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people are like, oh, PS4 is doing indie stuff, Xbox One, they're leading the way on indie. I was like, well, I mean, Nintendo really led the way with the Wii U with, you know, getting all these indie developers on. So, and I mean, a lot of titles are still yet to release, and they'll probably eventually go to the other systems as well. But I think Nintendo is deserves some credit for reaching out to some of these indie developers and featuring them more heavily. I think that's part of it too. On the eShop versus, let's say, the App Store. You know, the App Store has a couple editor's choice games that get listed up there, but the eShop, it features indie games prominently side by side with $60 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nintendo's not afraid to put an eShop game at front and center on the top of the eShop page. So I think that's really cool. And it's kind of helping to hopefully shift it from what it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and I also mentioned it too, the same principle too can work the other way. And we touched on that briefly, Jules and I, where a game, you know, can be overpriced, it can be fun, but is it the sort of game that you want to spend $60 on, or, you know, are you content getting a $2 rental from a Redbox or something? I used the Angry Birds compilation as an example. I think they're pretty fun games, but I don't think anybody objectively can say $50 is good value for this compilation. And granted, it has some perks, but I just don't think the content justifies the price. So it can work on the other ways.
Yeah, that's true. What was it? There's another compilation coming out, the Cut the Rope compilation on the 3DS. And that's priced a little bit better, I think. Is it $30? I think it's $29.99, so it's not $40 or $35. But yeah, I think it's $30, and it has like three games or something like that. It has like Cut the Rope Experiments and some of them. But yeah, like for some of those things, like you said, it can be detrimental in the other direction. So.
Yeah, I've always had a stand in reviewing games that a good common, because seeing what video games are, they're an entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
So a good common denominator through all review games is how much were you entertained? How much did you enjoy them?
Mm-hmm.
But after reading the Purely piece, it made me think a little more about price. And I like what Joel says about when he talked about Bomb Monkey and being a bite-sized game. And understanding, like, is this a game you can pick up and play for a few minutes? So, and that made me start thinking, like, when we as game journalists review a game, we got to keep that in mind. What is this game for? Mm-hmm. Versus, is it a child's game? Is this game for children? How good of a game for children is this? Mm-hmm. If this a bite-sized game, like Joel says, how good of a bite-sized game is it? A puzzle game. Don't compare that to a $50 puzzle game on the Wii U. Yeah, they're both puzzle games, but one may be a full-blown level puzzle game, and this one's a bite-sized game where you just play for a minute or two, play a level, and then move on. So when we begin, we got to keep in mind what the game's purpose is. Not for me, it's not necessarily the cost, it's what's the purpose of the game. Is it just to play for a few seconds, or is it just to run around like crazy, or is it just to have fun with friends, like going back to Cloudberry Kingdom? Yeah, it's a race game, it's a puzzle game, but it's a game to have, really, to play with your friends. Like, it's not as fun playing by yourself as it is playing with four other people. Mm-hmm. Graphic wise, it's not impressive. The level design is impressive because there's a lot going on at times, but it's nothing really like trying to anything like level design. So if you want to compare it to that, no, it's not as good of a game, but you got to compare it to what is the purpose of the game. Mm-hmm. In my opinion.
Yeah,
I think that. Oh, go ahead, Drew.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Yeah, I think that's key in reviewing like any game. That's kind of like the paramount consideration is, you know, what are the developers trying to do with this game? You know, who is this game made for? You know, kind of evaluating those things. You know, because I see there's a lot of reviews that go out there, and there's some reviewers where they'll compare directly to maybe another game in the franchise. This happens a lot with Zelda games where they're like, oh, we gave Wind Waker a 9.5. We think Twilight Princess is not as good, so it gets this. You know, it gets a 9 or 8.5 or whatever. I was like, well, I mean, if we're going to compare, like, you know, why can you really compare a game like Tropical Freeze with Mario Brothers 3? You know what I mean? Like, both are great games, and but you know, I don't think we can like compare games just across the board. Like, oh, okay, this is how far this game got up on the pegboard. This one, it's not as good as that, so it goes right here. You know, you have to evaluate the games as a single unit almost. You know, you know the enjoyment of the game. Was it fun? Was it, you know, did it match or beat your expectations of what the game was supposed to be, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take them in context of their time. Because, mm-hmm. like, I mean, by that logic, Super Mario 64, you mm-hmm. know, was a 10 for me. And in every Mario game that followed, you know, what would I do with it? But,
yeah,
I mean, looking at it, you know, just subjectively, like a camera, like in Super Mario 64, if a Mario game released today, mm-hmm. they had a camera like that, mm-hmm. I mean, we'd rip it. We'd say, boy, this is almost broken. You know, you have to constantly. So you got to, you know, take it in the context of its of its time. So, that's frustrating to see people, you know, do that.
I hate those direct comparisons or they're mentioning in the review, like, oh, I see in this other game. The other thing I hate is the nostalgia glasses, you know, where people have these elevated I don't know, views of past games. It happens a lot with, you know, like Splinter Cell games. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, there'll never be as good of a game as Chaos Theory. Never, never, you know. And so, like, every game is like, you know, can't match any of those expectations. And so the entire review is just them talking about Chaos Theory and why this game is not like Chaos Theory, which means it's bad. You know, I don't know. Like, that's just an example, but...
It's funny you say that because I finally have my wife playing A Link Between Worlds. And nostalgia for her, there's nothing that's ever going to beat the original NES game. She knows it by heart. And we've played Skyward Sword and Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess and, you know, Link to the Past. And it's always, but she's honest. She admits it, at least. She knows that it's, you know, the nostalgia classes that are doing the talking, but which is okay, just being a fan. But if we're, you know, if we're journalists, if we're writing for other people, you know, that's something we got to be careful of.
Now here's a, like, I think Zelda, like what you brought up earlier, is the perfect example of reviewing, because to me the best Zelda game is Ocarina of Time, but the most enjoyable Zelda game to me was Wind Waker. So, like, which one would I put higher on the pedestal is the question. It's like, well, I don't know. Like, I really, really enjoyed Wind Waker.
Yeah.
But Ocarina of Time's clearly, for me, the best one overall.
Mm. Which remake did you enjoy better? Wind Waker HD or Ocarina of Time?
I haven't played HD yet.
Oh.
No. I mean, I played the old one, like, five, six times. I said, like, HD is on my list, but like, I've played it plenty of times.
So I'll get it eventually.
I'll get it eventually. But it is one of, it's my, the one I most enjoy. But Ocarina of Time is the best, if that makes sense. And so, like, I don't know where, if I, if I gave them all scores, I don't know how I would have to score them. They're all 10s.
We should make a list. I remember one of the first issues of Pure Nintendo, one of the 8-page ones. Had like a list of top five. We should all of us get together and try to formulate some kind of list.
That sounds good.
On an off topic, I bet you he knows about more about PNN Magazine than we do, Justin.
It's possible.
He caught a mistake in our Wikipedia page. I had no clue about.
Oh, well, that's good.
Well, well, keep in mind, I can't. I, you know, I come in as a fan. You know, from your Kickstarter. So.
Well, yeah, no, that's good. I mean, we need that.
Like, when was our first printed issue? What issue was that?
Our first printed issue? Well, we had issue 6, but issue 7 was the first printed one after the Kickstarter was funded. But issue 6 we had in print, and then we re-released issues 1 through 5 in print on MagCloud.
Well, but, according to James' introduction from the editor, issue 5 was the first issue that you could buy in print.
That section.
So I forget what your blurb was. You're like, you can now smell and touch it, and it smells freshly squeezed or something.
Yeah,
it was the one that had
had
E3 coverage. It had a Xenoblade review, but
It had the Wii U and Batman and all that on the front.
One of those little things. I can't even remember how we were talking about it the other day, but
yeah, that's true. I guess we did have that in print. It wasn't. I always. When I think of print, I think of when we started doing subscribers, shipping it out to subscribers. But I guess that does make sense. I think we did. I think we put that on issue 2, issue.com, and I think you could print it off there. Maybe it was just MagCloud. It's too long. Too long ago.
I know. Like, I was like, yeah, Trevor said that. I'm like, if I said that, it must be true.
you know how I know, because I remember at first the first 4 issues weren't available, so.
Oh, that's right.
Once I hooked up with the Kickstarter and got the first issue and loved it, I went back and I bought the Pikmin issue, and I bought what I could, and that was one of them that I could buy through MagCloud.
Yeah.
And then a few months after that,
and then 1 through 4. That's right.
So that's how I knew it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I have the print issue. Let me grab it.
Dead air, James. Keep it going.
Dead air.
I'm just bragging. We're just bragging here. Yeah. I think we put them upside down, actually. No, heck, that's fine.
I got to say, for months, I've been thinking my postman must read my issue because I always get it late.
Oh, yeah.
And it always looks like it's been, I know it's sealed, but it always looks like it's been read. So
he's thumbing through it.
I'm hoping if they're watching, just subscribe, okay?
Yeah, just subscribe. Leave my issue for me.
Going back to reviews, though, there is a question that came up in my head while you guys were speaking. Because Justin mentioned, you know, people may be stuck in the past, like for Splinter Cell or something. So who is the best reviewer for a game? Like, let's say there's a new Splinter Cell coming out. Like, should it be a veteran Splinter Cell player who may be stuck in the past, or someone who may have played half of a one and is kind of a novice to the series? Like, what would make the best review? Because it's something I've always wondered. Always been going back and forth with. Like, it's cool to have a twist of a novice, but they may miss the point of the game, but then you have a veteran who's stuck in the past and may just be comparing it to a game that's already 10 years old, maybe missing the point of the game as well.
I think in a perfect world, you'd have two guys or even more doing it, to get a different perspective. You know, I know obviously that's not practical or realistic for most games, but like when you guys both did like the Assassin's Creed, even though you tended to agree, I found that very entertaining to read because, it's like, okay, this is what, Justin enjoyed, this is what James enjoyed. And, and I think fans who read that, especially if they follow like pure Nintendo, they can be like, all right, I know Tristan likes this style of game, so I'm really going to pay attention to what he says, or I've never played this game before. Let's see what, Matt says or whatever. So that's my cop-out answer. Have two people do
Yeah, yeah.
it. No,
Well,
like I.
I liked your review, Trevor. You did one with your wife, I think, right?
Oh, sort of. Yeah, it was that
Yeah.
that girl's
Yeah,
fashion shoot
it was
game.
the girls' fashion shoot game, and but I thought it was really good. Like it turned out really well, I thought. And I remember, I think the company contacted us, and they loved the what we did with it. So
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
excellent.
they were
I'll have to
like, "Oh,
tell her.
that was such a clever idea. We really liked it." So I was like, "Yeah,
Oh,
cool."
thank you so much. I'll have to tell her that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because going back to what we were talking about earlier, knowing a game's audience. I mean, if I was to review something like that on my own, how would I score it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like I did that earlier with a couple of kids games, and I kind of took a cop-out route. I kind of wrote an overview. I didn't give it a number because I didn't think it'd be fair. In the case of that game, since that was more, I think that was that a retail release too, or just eShop? I think it was more expensive in any event.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I really got to get the perspective of somebody who this is for, even though my wife's not in that age bracket. At least she's a female, can appreciate what they're trying to do. So yeah, no, that's great to know. I'll be glad to. Yeah, she'll get a kick out of it when she watches this.
Yeah, I liked the tandem, I think. Like, James and I, we did like our review and then the next person's review, but it was cool having that tandem dialogue almost. Like, I don't know, I thought that was a unique approach.
Nice. Well, we'll have to do it again, not necessarily me, but somebody.
Yeah, I like that. What were you saying, James? Go
Well, I was
ahead.
gonna say I agree that because reviews are opinion, like I think the best way is to get multiple people to review a game. Like I think what made Justin and ours mind, I'm gonna say it's so great and awesome, was because we didn't collaborate. We talked about, oh, maybe I talk about this and talk about this, and we both decided like, no, it's better just to write it how we would normally write it. And what we're gonna come out, there's gonna be some of the same stuff we talk about, but then he's gonna realize something that I didn't realize, and vice versa. So you get a bigger scope of the game, because I may look at a game one way, and Justin looks at a game another way. And then to get a even just not a bigger overall, not a better score of a game, but a better overall view of a game, it's better to have more than one person, because I may not do a quest that he does that he enjoyed. A lot of the, maybe with especially when the side quests. So yes, in a perfect world, there should be multiple views of a game. But
Yeah,
that's
I think, oh, sorry.
no. But to answer your question, James, more of a novice person to review a game or someone who's experienced with a franchise, I would actually tend to say the novice person is better at reviewing the game. I think they're going to be more objective. And evaluate the game as a whole, rather than connecting it to whatever baggage the franchise has. So I would say, in pretty much all cases, that's a better route. Even if the person has never played any of the games in the franchise, I would still rather them, because almost every other game, even if it's in a franchise, like Yoshi's Island, take Yoshi's Island for instance. I mean, if you played Super Nintendo one, that's great. If you played the DS one, that's cool too. But you don't really need that. It gives you some context to maybe what to expect, but it's a wholly different game. There's all new power-ups, all new gameplay mechanics, all new, I guess it just depends. If it's a game that's more story dependent on previous titles, like the Crysis series. Have you guys played the Crysis series? Crysis 1, 2, 3, I mean, they are, sequels and it's a whole series. So, if you haven't played 1 or 2 and you're reviewing 3, well, then I don't think you can review it effectively. So I guess it just depends on the case. With a case like Zelda and Mario, where games are very different, there's some similarities, but there's a lot of differences. I would say having someone who's fresh to it is better.
Yeah. And they at least have to be a fan of that genre of game. Like, you're not going to have someone who hates sports games review sports games, someone who hates shooters review shooters. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which I've seen before in reviews, and you can tell the person.
Yeah, like, just, hey, I play this Madden. It's just like all the others, or they don't give it, or like a shooter game where they're used to playing dance games or something. Like, yeah. the shooter game is boring.
We touched on that briefly. I think in the last KoopaCast talking about them. I won't say the review, but there was a review of a recently released prominent game, and it was pretty evident that the reviewer wasn't very. I guess wasn't very adept with that genre, and it was for a game that's really kind of tailored to somebody who's experienced in that, and you know, it's kind of. I think it does a disservice because, you know, if you're not good at it, show some humility and say, hey, can we let another reviewer take a look at this? Give me something else, because you're not doing anyone any favors in a case like that.
Yeah, I feel sometimes with. Websites like CNET or, you know, some of these non-gaming websites that are reviewing games, I feel like sometimes their reviewers are like completely clueless. So I feel like whether or not you're a novice to a franchise or whatever game you're playing, I think you almost have to have some sort of a grasp on it, like a movie reviewer. You're not going to trust a person who reviews movies if they haven't been in the movie industry, or, you know what I mean? Like, if they don't have experience with it somehow and knowledge of the medium. So, you know, having someone from like CNET Money who's reviewing Mario Kart or something and gives it a 6 or a 5, like, oh, this isn't fun, you should play HD systems or whatever they say. Sometimes the reviews just baffle me, but I think that does a complete disservice, because their audience are the clueless people, are the people that aren't as into games. So, you know, it does a disservice to them, because us as gamers, we don't care about their opinion. We know they're not adept or knowledgeable in the medium. So we're already discounting their reviews before they even come out. But anyways, so there's that part of it, I guess.
Good point. Well, any last thoughts on that?
I guess I would say I hold, not to jump back too much on Metacritic, but it annoys me that some of the reviews like that get Metacritic billing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, especially you see it if a game that's almost universally praised. And then there's one or two that stand out like an eyesore, and you're like, what in the world? Mm-hmm. And I think in a case like that, opinions are opinions, and they're going to differ. But I think in a case like that, when you're so far out of the realm of everyone else, you know, do some self-examination of yourself and be like, okay, what, you know, is it maybe me?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, even though a lot of reviews are opinions, they somewhat stay around the same. Like, a lot of games say 7, 8, or 9, but yeah, like you're saying, there's that one game that all of a sudden gives it a 5. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest news in the world, and it's like, what are you saying? Like, why? Everyone else is giving it 7 and 8. Why are you giving it 5? And there's always argument of, oh, these people are telling the truth. Everyone else is bought out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's not true. Like,
yeah.
Especially in the case of Nintendo, you know, the one who gives the low score, it's like everyone else is a Nintendo fanboy. And I don't know.
Yeah. So silly.
Even though you gotta respect it's their opinion, you look at yourself, why am I 3 points different? Why do I hate this game and everyone else is enjoying this game?
Yeah, and the thing with opinions, I mean, opinions are opinions, but they have to be informed.
Exactly.
If you just don't know, I mean, I remember a month back I reviewed a tiny eShop game, nothing particularly special, and it was in a genre that just really was not me. I ended up asking the developer for another code, and I sent it to Tristan to get a second opinion, because I normally don't look at other reviews while I'm writing mine. In this case, I did, because I was having a hard time with it, and I read a review that gave it a 9, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm thinking like four. Let's go
Yeah, I'm way off base here.
So I sent it to Tristan to get a second opinion, and thankfully we were kind of in sync, so I ended up sticking with my guns more or less. But yeah, when you're that off the realm, you know, you got to ask yourself why.
Yeah, check yourself.
All right. So I have a secret topic that I didn't talk to you guys about.
Oh boy.
And I've been working.
Did you talk to us about any topics?
I saw
a talk about how you were awesome.
And how was awesome and this topic. Mm-hmm. Those are your topics.
I was like, I can talk that. That's easy.
But my secret topic, I've been working in my heads, in my brains. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it down in our post for this KubaCast. I don't know if you guys read it, but the topic is Nintendo's biggest problem. The Wii U's biggest problem isn't necessarily Nintendo's fault.
Ooh, yes, tell us.
And this is what I mean by that is I'm thinking about Batman, Arkham, crap, what's it called? Knight. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not coming to the Wii U. It's coming to just the next time it comes to the PS3 or 360. It's coming to PS4 and Xbox One. And it got me thinking of game developing costs. They are extremely high. The profit margins are extremely low right now. So game developers have to develop biggest bang for the buck and the easiest way to develop. And it also goes back to an indie developer I talked about. We posted about it. Crap, what was the name of the game?
Was it SteamWorld Dig?
Yes, SteamWorld Dig, not coming to the Wii U. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Because they have to think about their overall cost and where the money's at. Mm-hmm. And you can't blame a company for doing that. And it's always been for the 360, for Sony and Microsoft, it's easy for them, just a developer, to make one game for both systems. Mm-hmm. Last generation, they developed for the 360 because that was the lower spec system. If they can develop for 360, it can easily go to PS3. That's why you always got these lower quality games on the PS3. But games like Uncharted that were PS3 exclusive looked a lot better because the developer developed for the 360 and it could easily port to the PS3. And the same thing if they can develop for the Xbox One, easily port to the PS4. I think the only reason we saw huge third parties last year or last generation was because the Wii couldn't be ignored. Mm-hmm. If you look back at the GameCube was ignored. Mm-hmm. And you look at the Wii, like, if the Wii U was even selling well, let's say it was selling 10,000, I still think it would be ignored to an extent by third parties. Because then they can go to the PS4, who's at 6,000, and Xbox One, who's probably somewhere around there too, so they can get 12,000 audience very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with
really
one game, they don't have to create two different games. And it's not the fault of Nintendo, I may disagree, it's the fault of Nintendo making a spec-wise weaker system. Mm-hmm. But it's the fault of the industry with such a high development cost now that they can't make two games. It's impossible for a lot of companies now to make two games. A lot of companies don't make two games. When there is two games, it's usually off on another developer.
Mm-hmm.
Like even when they had the Wii games, the Wii version was made by a different developer. The Wii U version is made by a different developer. Mm-hmm. Because they can only make one, like Rocksteady's not going to really hand off Arkham Knights to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they for them they're going to make one version, and they're going to make it for the PS4 and they make it for the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, with the Wii U hardware, it's not like you know, I'm not tech savvy, but it's not like you can just chuck source code and click copy. I mean, it's they deliberately have a unique build and it takes effort.
Exactly.
I don't think it's necessarily so much power issue. Cause I mean, you just said, was it Retro called the Wii U a powerhouse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, a lot of the developers either don't want to take the time and effort or possibly maybe they just don't have the ability to do it justice. Maybe they're just not, you know, qualified.
Yeah, it goes back to the infrastructure, because both with the PS4 and Xbox One, you got a whole bunch of RAM and a whole bunch of processor. So you just make a game in that realms. With the Wii U, like you said, it's still powerful. You just got to move things around and use the GPU more than maybe a processor. And that takes time and money and extra work that they don't have for a game.
Yeah, because as a company, you're looking at what is the cheapest way I can make the best looking game. So they're like, hey, we've got an engine that runs right out of the box on Xbox One and PS4. Oh, but we have a completely different architecture on the Wii U. We're gonna have to port it or split our code base and do a completely separate version for the Wii U. That's gonna cost about $5 million. Well, how many copies do you think we'll sell? Well, the Wii U audience has 6 million systems out there. We think 10% of them might buy it. Oh, okay. So I think it's more like you said, James, it's not necessarily Nintendo's fault. It's a really a business decision. So you've got Xbox and PlayStation, their markets are hugely similar, So like you said, you got PS4 at 6 million, you've got Xbox One maybe at 5 million. So there you go. You've got 11 million in your target audience. Now do I think the Arkham Knight would sell decently on the Wii U. They would obviously get more sales, but it comes back to and maybe they decided this and had this meeting that said, hey, do we make a Wii U version? And they're like, well, if we're not going to spend the time to take advantage of the hardware, to use the gamepad effectively, to, optimize it and do all that, maybe we just shouldn't port it at all. And it stinks, but maybe that's the business logic. I don't know.
Yeah, and I strongly feel even if to say the Wii U is at 10 million, that decision would still be hard to make because it's like, are we going to spend an extra 20 million pointing it over to the Wii U? Is that worth how much it's going to sell? Yes or no. And so that's another business decision that they have to make it. But it was easier for the Wii because the Wii you couldn't ignore because the Wii was 80 million while everything else was at 40 million and so on. So it's like, well, I guess we kind of have to make a Wii version because there's a whole big
Well,
number over here we need to get.
even with the Wii, it sort of caught a lot of third parties off guard because once, the launch and well beyond was so successful, they started scrambling and they even admitted it. They're like, we got to get on the ball. But going to what you were saying, the business decision, does that make sense? It does. I wish as a, as a consumer and also as a journalist reporting news that companies could just be candid and say that rather than giving, cryptic corporate speak of, oh, we feel that, whatever. It's not really fooling, gamers anyway. It might be fooling their investor, shareholders, whatever, but I would respect a company, and I have the few that I've been honest enough to admit, is just, not worth the efforts, the profit margin. But I hate getting press releases that try to put a spin on it. I'll leave it at that.
What? And I hate the, sorry, James.
That's it.
But people mentioned especially with Batman Arkham Knight, people like, oh, well, yeah, of course it's not on the Wii U because it's not nearly as powerful. And yeah, I guess that's sort of an argument, but I mean, game engines nowadays are highly, highly scalable. I mean, like, look at the Arkham Knight version for the PC. Do you know what the base resolution for it's probably going to be? It's probably going to be like 800 by 600. Because that's like the base resolution for like every PC game since 2005. Ever since we went to 8 by 6 is kind of the lowest res. You don't have 640 by 480 monitors anymore. Anyways, so if you have a game that you're developing on PC, you're obviously developing an engine that's highly scalable. So you can determine how high res your textures are. And as a game developer, you can tweak these settings. I mean, you have a game engine, you can output whatever resolution you want. You can choose how many polygons you want your characters to have. You can choose your draw distance. That's all really easy stuff, should be if they're developing it right. So I don't buy the power argument at all. I think it's strictly a business thing because it would be very easy for them to run Arkham Knight on 360, on Wii U, on PS3. I think it's just going to be marketing. It's going to be, hey, here's the definitive next generation version. It's only on next gen systems. You know, they want to get away from these cross-gen games like Assassin's Creed 4, where it's like, oh, yeah, it's coming out on all of them. And people are like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. But it probably could have been better if they developed just for the PS4 and just for the Xbox One. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, have such high expectations for it. So I think it's going to be marketing in the end, and they're going to be like, yeah, it's next gen only, whatever. You can't do it on older systems. But it's, yeah, it's totally doable. So.
It's funny too when you watch like with your example with Assassin's Creed, if you watch comparison videos, I don't know if with each generation the leap is just getting smaller, but I think to the casual observer, I don't think the difference is huge. As someone who, has an eye to look for things, you can be like, okay, this is a little different. This isn't as smooth. But to the casual observer, they're not, it's not a huge jump. It's not like, the jump from, 16-bit to 32 or 64. So would a slightly less robust version, work on the market? Probably.
Yeah, and I like you said, the games don't look that much different. Now, maybe a purely next gen developed game is going to look that much better. I don't know. But so far from what we've seen, it's not a huge difference. And people constantly discount the Wii U. They say, oh, it can't run 1080p games. You know, the Wii U has like more 1080p games native
At 60
than,
frames per second.
yeah, 60 frames per second than like the entire 360 and PS3 had. So it's like, and like people still think the Wii U is less powerful than the PS3 and 360. And I don't know, that just baffles me. I was like, well, if you're choosing to think that, nothing's going to change your mind.
See, that's an opinion that's not informed. We talk about respecting opinions, but when an opinion is not informed,
It's hard to respect it. So.
Yeah, and I think that's a line that needs to be drawn in the sand. It's like, what is next gen? Is it 60 frames per second, 1080p, which most that's the highest you can go on a lot of TVs unless you have a buttload of money and can buy a 4K TV. So, and the Wii U can do that very easily. Probably easier than PS4 can. A lot easier than Xbox One can. Xbox One can't seem to make a game 1080p at 60 frames per
Nope,
second.
not at all.
So, does that make you the next gen Xbox One, not next gen? Is it polygons? Like, what is next gen? Like, I don't. That's what needs to be decided as industry as a whole.
It used to be so easy back in the day, with the bits and
Yeah, we went up by bits,
when did they
and then it
stop
went.
talking about that, Dreamcast days maybe? I think that's the last I've heard of it.
The whole bit days are different. Yeah, because nowadays pretty much the standard processor is just 64-bit. You know, it's a the nomenclature they used for consoles, for bits is a little different now. But I just think it's interesting. I think people a lot of the console wars is nebulous. It's put on by fanboys from every system, you know. Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, we all do it, but yeah, there's no reason power-wise. It's now with the Wii and the 360 and PS3, I do think that was generally a power differential. They're not developing it, they're not able to create the exact same experience across all three of those platforms. Now, the Wii U, PS4, and Xbox One, I mean, look at Rayman Legends. I mean, there's several cross-platform games. Look at Assassin's Creed 4. There were even comparison videos where some of the Wii U shots looked better than, the Xbox One or the PS4. So, frame rate may have been a little stronger. Maybe the frame rate dipped a little bit more on the Wii U. I still enjoyed it. But,
I don't even notice frame rate hardly, unless it's awful.
Yeah, unless
I
it's
know
awful, yeah.
I have some friends who are like eagle-eyed for that, but it's got to be pretty bad for me to make note of it.
Yeah, I can definitely tell if it's not 60, because 60 is just like butter smooth. But if it's 30 or 40 or whatever, I mean 20, it's especially for a game like Assassin's Creed 4, it's not really necessary. The detail in the environments, I would give up frame rate for for detail. Now, some people would be like, blasphemy, 60 frames per second or death, you know. But anyway, it depends on the game, you know. And some games, like even racing games like Need for Speed, I believe they locked that at 30 frames a second. So, and that looks awesome, you know, very smooth. And the Wii U version was probably the definitive one. So, anyways, the whole power argument between the three current systems is silly to me. And when people try and say that Wii U is not next gen, it's stupid because what is a generation? A generation is the next systems, right? So what's the next Nintendo system? The Wii U. What's the next Microsoft system? Xbox One. What's the next PlayStation? It's PS4. They're all in the same generation. Next gen is, it's.
They're all supposed to do 1080p, 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
Or Xbox One.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 720p, 30 frames. It's just as good. Sorry, I could keep on ranting. What else do you want me to rant about? No.
What do you think of the virtual console? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, boy. I don't think we have enough time. I would gladly put out a casting call right now. Nintendo, go ahead and hire me to port your virtual console games. I'll do a much better job than what you're doing. So.
All right, I guess so. What games have you guys been playing as we wrap up? Let's start with Trevor. What games have you been playing?
I've actually been bouncing around between a few. I'm replaying A Link to the Past. I finally had transferred it over to Wii U.
Nice.
And it looks great on the tablet. I love being able just to, you know, play it on the tablet. And, and actually by doing that, I think it got my wife to finally check out A Link Between Worlds. I'm not replaying that, but I'm, you know, helping her in part. So, I'm kind of in that Zelda mode. I played a couple nice puzzlers on the 3DS recently. Most recent one was Topingo from Hugo Smith, which is a great little game. Mm-hmm. And, and a $2.99 game at that. So you're not spending a lot. Other than Zelda, I haven't been doing a whole lot of Wii U. I did download Hulu Plus to get a month trial.
Yeah.
So I've been watching The Twilight Zone on Hulu Plus. But I'm looking forward to a Block Drop. Block Drop U, I think, comes out tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Puzzle game I've been following. And another budget game, $1.99. Uh-huh. So, and I think it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Yeah, well, I've been playing Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and it's pretty awesome. I think I've gone through it enough. Like, I could play through it again, but I think I've gone through it enough to where I can finish up some of my backlog. So I need to finish up Arkham Origins. Since the new Arkham Knight got announced, I've been like, oh yeah, I need to finish up Arkham Origins. And I need to finish up Assassin's Creed 4. I never played through the whole story. I got lost in the open world awesomeness. But and Katie's been playing Layton, so I'll play some of the puzzles with her every now and then.
I feel kind of bad for Origins because Rocksteady's kind of like, yeah, we had them do Origins, so there wasn't such a long break between Batman games.
Yeah, it's the black sheep of the series. And I love it because they said Arkham Knight's the last game in the trilogy. I was like, so Origins didn't even happen. Oh, man. Yeah. Poor Origins. I like it. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. We do have a Facebook question. I'm glad I decided to check. Mm-hmm. From Josh Wise. He says, do you think Nintendo will ever go back to classic side-scrolling Metroid?
Ooh.
I hope so. I mean, as much as I love like the Prime games and even Other M for that matter, I like that too. I know not everyone did, but I think probably for the majority, you know, Super Metroid on the Super Nintendo is probably the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
The question would be, would you want that on the Wii U or just on the 3DS?
Mm-hmm.
I would take either, but just in terms of what I have a bigger library for, I prefer it on the Wii U. Not just because I have more on the 3DS, but I think also to play it on the, on the TV. I think it's the type of game that fits better on the big screen, but I would take either.
Yeah.
So.
I would say I would on the Wii U, I would prefer it to be Metroid Prime-esque, because I think it would be a game that could showcase the it would be a Nintendo franchise that would benefit most from HD, I think. Like Mario obviously benefits from HD, but the style is such that, you don't care if like there's like rips showing up on Mario's overalls or, where if you're playing like Metroid, I mean, Samus is getting like cuts on her suit or, it's a little grittier or, I think it'd be a franchise that would benefit more from that. But they could still do like Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, an awesome side scroller with a lot of immersion, a lot of depth, and that would be awesome. So I guess if they were doing, I guess strictly like a 2D one, I would say 3DS first, but because I want just a nice 3D awesome Metroid on the Wii U.
I would have to agree. Like if the Wii U version was a side scroller, I would be disappointed at first. Because like you were saying, the two Nintendo titles that could really show off the Wii U's HD capabilities is Metroid and Zelda. And so if they make a side scrolling Metroid game, yeah, it's gonna be fun, but it's not what I want on Wii U necessarily.
So it could. And I think, Other M had a lot of side-scrolling elements to it. So I feel like Nintendo is probably evaluating the success or not so much success of that one. And I doubt they would do something similar. I think they would probably, because Other M was vastly different than Prime. So I feel like, it's going to kind of maybe shift in the other direction with the next one. But could be wrong.
It's kind of a shame because I thought Other M had a lot of
Yeah.
good ideas. I think of a lot of it had to do with the characterization of
Yeah.
Samus, which I'll be honest, I really liked it myself, but I can understand why so many didn't.
Yeah,
But
I really enjoyed the game myself too, so.
yeah, I thought it was good. Going back to Metroid though, if for those who didn't know, there was a Kickstarter from Varia Games for a game called Revan,
Revan, yeah.
which is very, very much in the style of 2D Metroid. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, they just had a successful Kickstarter, and I actually did an interview with a couple of the guys. So yeah, it looks like a promising game. It's not going to be out for a while, but one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, because I feel like the other thing too, and people mention this a lot with the Wii U as a criticism lately, is the Wii U has too many platformers. And platformers, I mean, is there too much of a good thing? I mean, platformers are great, but I could see the point, that there are a lot of a certain type of genre on the Wii U. So I would hope they would branch out a little bit more with it, with Metroid.
I
I'm a huge
suppose if you don't, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I'm a huge Metroid fan, and I love all the games. I'm not, like some Metroid fans are like, oh, Other M is just, oh, it's not canon, it's awful. I'm not that type of a fan. There's gonna be ups and downs, but I'm still gonna enjoy the game.
No, I was just thinking because was it Retro was teasing their next project? Do we think it's Metroid?
It's Metroid. I'm convinced it is.
It's got to be. Well, and Miyamoto even said Retro would be the top candidate for doing another Metroid. I think they were asking him about that last fall or something. But I mean, I think it's just got to be. Part of me, I think they said in that interview that they started work on the game just in December. I wonder if that's entirely true or not. I'm skeptical. I think they've maybe been working on something for longer.
I think it's if they are working on Metro, it's a lot further along than definitely December.
Yeah, well, you've got to figure too, as one project's wrapping, regardless of what they say, I think there's always stuff in tandem. So
Yeah,
It's like Donkey Kong was wrapping. You figure there's going to be a small contingent that are starting work on the next one.
like we talked, I think a few KubeCasts before, how it stages. So like while you're and so and so post-production or bug checking, you can start developing the beginnings of storyboarding and
Yeah, because you can
concept art
get,
of the first game.
yeah, because like, what are your artists doing in the last 6 months of development? They've already done all the concept art. They've done some level sketches and all this stuff. So they're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. Might as well have them start, conceptualizing a new game, a new series. So.
And the module people making the models and like it people they you actually start designing the game fairly early.
Yeah, so
So
I could see them maybe like, hey, we actually started working on the game in December, like developing it and actively bringing together assets and things like that. I could see, I don't know if it'll be as soon as December. I think that'd be awesome. But yeah, I really hope it's Metroid. I think yeah, it would just be awesome. Yeah. Metroid Prime is one of my favorite games of all time, so.
Now going back on the way back fault, the way back fault of 3 years ago. Three E3s ago, two E3s ago.
Three.
Remember, there was supposed to be a retro game.
Yeah,
It was the one where they talked about Nintendo Land for like 4 hours at the end.
yeah,
And
yeah.
the rumor was that there was a retro game, but they pulled it last second. So that was, we can all pause, that was Donkey Kong. Would
Could
that
be.
been exciting? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would have been. But how,
But
yeah,
all the,
would
everyone
they?
assumed it was like, oh, that was Metroid, and that was what the rumor stated. But if they've been working Donkey Kong this whole time, it probably, unless it was a very, very fresh concept of logo Metroid, then no.
I think no matter what they showed, it probably would have been
Better than
a bit
Nintendo
later
Land
than
for four
Nintendo Land. It
hours.
kind of overstayed its welcome a little bit.
Yeah.
So
I think that
yeah.
gave validity to the rumor because it seemed like Nintendo Land kind of just dragged its feet. It's like, oh, we had something here, but now we need to fill time. And it's kind of went on.
And yeah, like I give Nintendo a hard time on this because they just don't understand pacing, of a show like that. It's like people are very fickle and forget easily. So if the last 2 minutes of your show is boring, they think your whole show is boring. What does Apple do? When Apple does a keynote, Steve Jobs had that thing where he would do, oh, and one more thing. It's not that like they were always like revolutionary announcements. It was just, oh yeah, there's always something at the end to get excited about. So not having that, it just kind of,
Yeah, you got to leave them wanting more, right?
Exactly. So, because like if you show even like, do you guys, James, you mentioned like just showing like a quick concept of Metroid. Do you remember when they talked about the revolution and Iwata came out and he held that black box? Do you remember they showed like a 5 second clip of Samus and her ship behind her? Remember that? It was just like a super quick concept, that came out well before Metroid Prime 3, but anyways, so you can it, just that little glimpse gets people excited.
Or even Skyward Sword when they announced that little art that was like 3 years before the game came out. That got
Like
everyone
people,
excited.
people speculated and all of this stuff.
Well, fans of Nintendo's big, IPs are so, anxious for the next thing. We'll take what we can get, even if it's just a little tweet or something. We'll go nuts and run with that. And what does it mean? And could this be, yeah, tease us, whet our appetites a little bit, get us talking.
Not to harp on this and kind of go a different direction, but look at Microsoft's press conference there in E3. They tease Halo, which is probably still a couple years off. They had nothing to show, but they knew that they had to show Halo because they're Microsoft. And what is what Microsoft fans want? The only thing Microsoft fans want is Halo. And so they knew they had to do it. So whatever they showed probably has
Absolutely.
nothing to do with Halo. The game could be totally different than that desert scene. It's
They're
just
like, oh yeah, that was a concept reel. We hadn't even actually started on the game, but
so it's but they knew they had to show it.
our animators were experimenting with sand, so
Yeah.
yeah.
You guys.
So, yeah, but I think if hopefully Nintendo goes back to a press conference, but if they do, they need to pace things a little bit better, you know, have some excitement here and there.
I guess that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for Justin and Trevor. And this episode, my goal for this episode is that it's going to get an EGOT. For those of you who don't know, EGOT is a prestigious title given to something or someone who's won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. So someone's going to take this KubaCast, put it on TV, and then they're going to take it, make a movie out of it. Then they're going to make a song about how great this KubaCast was, and then it's going to be a Broadway play.
Yeah, nice.
That's my goal. This is
Nice.
our EGOT episode, not episode 48 or whatever. This is episode EGOT.
Episode
So
you
if any
got.
of our fans are aspiring filmmakers
There you go.
we
There you
got there's a lot of content they can make, and I decided, I was talking to Jay Money about this. He's like, who would play you? Brad Pitt, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm
I could see it. I could see it.
not over exaggerating. I think he'd be great.
Well, I mean, what, Brad Pitt was voted, what, sexiest man in America? And what was it? You were voted sexiest man in high school?
It's
Yeah.
true. See,
All right. Yeah.
he
Yeah.
creepily knows a lot about
So
us.
there's the, yeah, just be glad I'm with you guys now. And
Keep your friends closer and your no, that's close enough. Nice.
And I thank you for joining us. We see you guys in weeks.
See ya.